Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery. Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
Welcome to a special episode of the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast. On today's show, you can hear Andy Samberg talk with Seth Meyers in an exclusive, hilarious podcast interview recorded backstage at Studio AG. You'll hear them swap stories about working on SNL, their favorite bad movies, underrated digital shorts, and more. Now, let's go to Seth.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Late Night Podcast. I am sitting in Andy Samberg's dressing room with my good
everybody.
Friend.
Welcome to the Late Night Podcast.
I don't talk. I don't sound like that.
I'm Seth. How's it?
This is the first... I don't often do this. We're doing this podcast after your appearance on the show.
Right.
Which was a lot of fun.
I had a great time. The reason being, I love you.
I love you, too. I hope people listening are cool with that. We read 18 cut jokes that you did not have time for at the Globes.
Correct.
And you were saying it was really nice to do because you get so many.
Yeah, and so many great ones. The writing staff was so good. I was saying to everyone, I felt like we could have done two whole good shows with the time that they allot.
People I don't think fully understand, because again, I'm a year away from having done it. You get, it's basically somewhere between 8 to 10 minutes as a host that you were responsible for.
Yes. Well, the top of the show can be anywhere from 8 to 10. I think you had the joke Seth can't tell after, and yours was like
front loaded our top.
Yeah.
How did you pick the people that were going to work for you or write for you on the Globes?
A few of them were people that I had worked with in the past on other award shows.
Yeah.
And then I never do anything without Akiva.
Right.
And I had buddies like Jake Szymanski kind of swing by periodically. It was the schedule was really bad by the time it was like official that we were doing it.
You did not have a ton of time.
I didn't have a lot of time. So there were a lot of people I knew that I wanted to work on it, like Amber Jenny and Allie, for example, or like Bo and Yang from SNL, as well as Fran and Sudi from SNL, that weren't going to be able to do it until after New Year's.
Right.
But I knew I really wanted them to do it. And Baze, you know, and Josh Patton, people like that. So we made deals with all of them, as well as people on the West Coast, because when I had a day or a half day off from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I'd go to our office in L.A. and worked with people like Gabe Liedman and Max Silvestri and Rachel Lynn, Dave Ferguson. I think that's almost everybody. I'm forgetting anyone.
When you say your office, this is the Lonely Island has an office in L.A.
Yes.
Is it the same office I've been to?
Yes.
It's a really a great office.
It's a wonderful space. It used to be the singer producer Babyface's office, who we are huge fans of.
And you did not do much to the decor, right?
We left it pretty much as is.
It's pretty much Babyface's decor.
Yes.
For you guys.
And it has a screening room in it because he was making a movie. And there used to be just dumb money in the record industry.
I'm heartbroken because one of my favorite things to do when we all lived here together was go see movies with you guys.
Yeah.
Particularly maybe movies that were more fun to see with friends and talk about what you maybe didn't love.
Uh-huh.
Do you do that a fair amount?
We try.
No.
Since kids, it's harder to justify, like, hey, I'm going to go watch a movie that I know I don't want to see so I can have fun not liking it.
That makes me feel better because the knowing that that moment happened for you guys. So even if I was living in the same place, we wouldn't have a ton of time.
Every now and again, we just straight up plan one.
Yeah.
Where we're like,
do you remember the last movie you guys all watched together?
Let's see. It was years ago we watched From Paris with Love.
Gotcha. The John Travolta
film. Travolta and Reese Myers.
Oh, Jonathan Reese Myers.
Jonathan
right?
Reese Myers doing Brooklyn accent.
Right.
Yeah.
We one of my great movie going experiences in my life was seeing the animated Beowulf movie.
Oh my God.
Which I genuinely loved.
Loved.
Yeah.
That one is the sweet spot. We always talk about that when people are like, what's like a fun, like good, bad movie you love? Because it's super entertaining, and it's also just nuts.
Yeah. And you kind of only remember Beowulf as being from one of those big, fat, like, Norton's English library books that you have. And so when you're watching it, like rock an action roll, movie.
Yeah. There's like hard guitar comes in, and he, like, explodes out of the inside of a sea monster's eyeball.
We might have seen Gran Torino together. Is there a chance we saw?
We haven't because I never saw Gran Torino.
I saw it maybe with Akiva.
I'm told I must.
The fact that it ends with him Eastwood singing a song called Gran Torino, that's just where you want.
Yes.
You've enjoyed the film on its merits as narrative storytelling, but that you want a couple comedy buddies.
I should clarify, From Paris with Love was a treat.
Yeah.
Really fun to watch.
The older you get, and everyone knows this, you just don't have 2 hours to watch
anything.
Yeah. Like, anything, even good things.
Actually, Liz Kikowski had a really funny joke for the Globes about this where she was like, who has time to watch a movie? You know, a movie, it's like an hour and a half, 2 hours long. I get home from work. I'm tired. I put on a Mrs. Maisel or a Glow, and I watch 5 straight episodes of that. I don't have time for a movie. I got to watch 5 straight episodes of my favorite show.
Well, that tricked me in a good way. Did you watch A Very English Scandal, the Hugh Grant?
And didn't get to it.
It's so great because it's three hour-long episodes. And you realize when it's over, this was a 3-hour movie they tricked me into watching. And I never would have done it, but I fully loved it because they broke it up into pieces.
There's another joke we got that was a Very English Scandal joke.
Which was?
That the show A Very English Scandal, which is, of course, just the ABC show Scandal with terrible British overdubs. And it was like, I'm Olivia Pope, and I work at the White House. And it was like, Olivia, I must have you right here in the Oval Office.
Yeah, my favorite movie of the year, I'm not lying, is Paddington 2.
Everyone keeps saying that.
I watched it over the Christmas break with my family, and it's the best.
Right.
And Hugh Grant is just the best.
Charming as ever.
Charming, playing a villain, chewing up the scenery, having the time
just
of his life.
Killing it. I love great. That guy.
It made me really happy.
I really want to see Paddington 2. I've been holding off on seeing every kids movie that has come out in the last 2 years because I want to stockpile for when our daughter starts watching movies.
Yep.
That I'll have like this huge reservoir of things I haven't seen either. So at least for the first like 2 times she forces us to watch them,
yeah,
I'll be enjoying it.
I'm saving, although Alexi's read them, I've never read the Harry Potter books because I was like waiting to have children. I thought it would be more fun than being an adult.
I never read them. I read the first one and then I watched all the movies.
Yeah.
My wife has read all of them multiple times.
Yeah. I feel like it's going to be the power play though when it's time for those kids to read those books. I think my wife's going to want to read them. To him, and I'm just gonna have to put my foot down
because I got to see what happens.
Yeah, I got to see what happens. We do a Q&A.
What house you think you would be?
I don't know any of the houses.
Gryffindor.
Sure, is that a good one? Slytherin? Is that where the cool dudes are?
You'd be Slytherin.
It'd be Slytherin. We do a Q&A every night in the audience, and one thing that came up tonight because you came up with me to talk to the audience, and we talked about this recently, but I feel like it wasn't recorded, so I want to have this conversation one more time for posterity.
Okay.
That one of the greatest things that ever happened to both of us at SNL was when the actual Nick Cage did Get in the Cage.
Oh my God, yes.
For those who don't remember, Get in the Cage was already one of the most insane update features. Will you please explain the premise real quick?
Well, basically the idea was I never got update features on because Alex Bays would always cut them.
Alex Bays is now the head writer of this show and is the greatest living joke writer in America.
He's incredible.
Yeah.
I love him. He's my friend. He always cut my update features and
you
crushed
did
my
not,
dreams.
There was not a convergence of styles with you no. and Bays.
So I got with my buddy Rob Klein and we were like, how can we come up with a feature that they can't cut?
Yeah.
And I had done Nick Cage as an impression a few times and thought it was really fun and wanted to do something more with it. And we were like, if we get a celebrity guest to be in the feature, no matter how crazy it is, they can't cut it because like Jude Law would have been at the show just to do this bit.
Yeah.
And the premise was they would talk to me as Nick Cage about the craft of acting. They would get in the proverbial cage right. with me, Nick Cage.
Gotcha. So just for those people at home who don't follow, I, the anchor of Weekend Update, would literally turn the show over to you as Nick Cage to interview a celebrity.
Correct. It was a show within a show.
Gyllenhaal, Law, Bradley Cooper, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds right.
So these were people that they were not going to cut. It was super safe.
Liam Neeson did it.
It was never going to get cut. It crushed so hard.
It did play great, too. Yeah, I was always very happy with the writing.
You played Nick Cage, though, however, it should be noted, as a full maniac.
Like lunatic person.
Oh, yeah. This is one of the greatest movie experiences of my life. I can't believe we missed it, which, as we're talking about, is a Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
Oh, my God.
That's the greatest.
We watched that here, right?
Yeah, we watched that in 30 Rock.
Yeah.
And that...
On 17.
Yeah, and that is sort of the Nick Cage that was you were playing, the crazy... Wonderful, should have won an Oscar performance of his in Port of Call.
I was playing Nick Cage as if his normal speaking voice was his character from Bad Lieutenant, Port of New Orleans.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then you reached out to the actual Nick Cage.
Yes, and was like, it would be my ultimate dream and my greatest honor if you would come do it with me. And I think he was such a good sport about it.
Yeah.
I think he also was like, if I come do this, everyone will be aware that I have a sense of humor about it, and I understand that this is someone who is a fan of mine who's doing a psychotic version of it, and we wrote that basically into the version that we did with him.
Yes, but we had to go run it with him ahead of time. We had to go to his dressing room, and it became pretty clear. Do you feel like he had read it ahead of time?
No.
Yes.
Definitely not.
So then it was the stress of reading it in real time, watching him reaction.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I also was... overwhelmed with respect that he trusted us so much.
Yeah.
That he was in the building without ever seeing a word.
He was also one of those people, and I'm not, with no exaggeration, just watching Nick Cage think is one of the most wonderful performances. He's such a specimen of humanity that it was mind-blowing.
Can I curse on this?
Yeah.
He's compelling as
he really
like
is.
You just want to watch this dude. He's interesting. He's making interesting choices in his normal life and on screen. He just like lives life in a particular way that no one else does. He's just an original.
And then he read through it and it was awesome, but it was also pretty muted.
Yeah.
And there was just a pause at the end of it. And as if memory serves, he basically said, "All right.
Yeah. Looks pretty good."
And then we walked out and we danced down the hallway.
Yeah, we skipped.
We skipped. It was so, we were giddy like kids that we had been able to be in a room with Nick Cage and he'd said yes.
He's like, yeah, it looks good.
And then he was awesome at dress. And then he was
electric.
Electric.
Yeah.
It was electric.
Yeah.
He pounded the table at one point and it felt like Thor's hammer. Like that there should have been a storm.
He did it on the last line, right?
Yeah.
We're going to have a three-way with the Declaration of Independence. Rah! Like at the table, we were like, holy this is the best moment of my life.
It was incredible.
Incredible. I'm so glad that you were there with me for that here at the end of all things.
Yeah, it was one of the best things ever. And it was, you know, I feel like your time at SNL is so glad because in the last 2 years, and I don't know if this is your memory of it as well, you were doing more things that were live and that were awesome. Because I don't think people... maybe at this point the legend of it is appreciated enough, like how hard those digital shorts were schedule wise and how much you were putting into them, and not just shooting them, but then you would come back and edit them, and in sort of the later time it must have been fun to do those live things.
So much fun. It what also happened was we kind of cycled over like a lot of like people left that had been there before us, and new people came in and new writers came in who had been watching the show and liked stuff that we had done.
Right.
And they'd be like, oh, we should put Andy in our sketch because we like what he does.
Yeah.
And it became that like it started feeding on the other side.
Yeah.
At the show. So I'd be like, hey, I get to do like a funny part in this live sketch now because somebody liked Lazy Sunday.
Yeah. No, I hadn't thought of that. But of course, people showed up who were fans of yours and that you were this tool that why wouldn't they use? Whereas I think when you show up in the first place, everybody kind of looks to you to teach
them what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas by the time people showed up, they were...
And also, like, we had such a stacked cast that even if I would write a really solid live sketch that would do well at the table read, Lauren would look at the rundown and be like, well, I could do this, you know, Bill sketch, or I could do this Andy sketch, or I could do this. And he'll be like, I'm going to do the Bill sketch because Andy's going to do a digital short.
Right.
And then they're both taken care of.
Yeah.
Not specifically Bill, obviously.
No, but it would make sense that he would feel as though you're taken care of. But then you wouldn't get that joy. And again, it was joyous to watch your digital shorts play in the house. But it was more like the feeling of doing something live at that show that crushes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It feels fantastic.
Can we talk real quick about Wish It Would Rain? I want to see if we can get the numbers up. It's not the most watched.
Is that true?
It's not the most watched digital short. Wish It Would Rain is, and this is a real good indicator of where I'm at as far as predicting hits. When you guys told me you were doing a digital short called Dick in a Box, I thought it was a terrible idea.
Yeah.
I've owned up to this.
Yeah.
Really rolled my eyes at it.
Yeah.
And it was arguably maybe like changed television. I came into your office and you played me I Wish It Would Rain. Yeah. And I laughed so hard I was crying.
Yeah.
And it's not... It did not resonate.
No, it didn't hit.
It didn't hit.
The crazy thing is that the version that aired was like a minute and a half shorter than the one that was at Dress.
Yeah.
Like we really cut it down.
So maybe I didn't... Is the long version up? When I rewatch it with people, am I showing them the...
Do you still have access to the SNL server?
I'm watching it off YouTube. So there's a longer version?
There's a longer version, yeah. It is... It takes its time.
The premise is it's a... sort of 80s-ish video called I Wish It Would Rain.
Yeah.
And it won't rain.
It won't rain.
And you basically step... It's a very... You much break the fourth wall and complain a lot about how they wouldn't...
Spring for a rain machine. The weather said it was going to rain.
Yeah.
But it's dry as a bone.
Suds, Jason Sudeikis, you think it's raining at one point, it turns out it's just...
Pissing on my head.
Just a dude pissing on your head. There's a crazy tangent with Emma Stone.
My assistant.
Who has a crazy big butt.
Yeah, maybe the biggest butt ever put on television.
That you could actually put a coffee cup on.
You can literally put your drink on it.
Yeah.
And then I'm basically doing stand-up in that section.
Oh, right. There's a long
I pull up there. A mic from the bottom of the frame.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, I don't know who the singer is supposed to be. Like, it's your nightmare, actually. But it's so it's so wonderful that you like it because it's for no one, about nothing.
Yeah.
There's definitely the trope in music. There's a lot of songs of like, I wish it would rain to wash away my tears.
Yeah.
I think there's probably like 10 songs about that. So that it seems promising.
But yeah, you're right. You feel the moment where the audience doesn't get the trope. Like, it's like a gear turning and the moment where they're supposed to click in, they just totally misses.
And I also think the fact that my character is like some sort of hodgepodge nightmare. We were like, is this an R&B song? Is he from Whitesnake?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand what I'm supposed to be feeling. And it's so slow.
It's really slow. But I highly recommend people watch that. And then one that I feel like I laughed exactly as hard at, which did work. I still feel it's like a little bit of a B-side of digital shorts, is Worlds Collide, which is you,
Reba.
You and Kenan Thompson as Reba.
Yeah, that's one of my faves. No
which
doubt.
Is immediately stupid in that it starts with the two of you.
Yes.
Like, so the first joke is Kenan is going to be Reba.
Right out of the gate, first shot is like,
yeah,
I'm Reba. And you're like, what?
But then it is basically a Rashomon.
It's a Rashomon.
Telling of how these two met. We're done with this enthusiastic sort of R&B backtrack.
And my character of myself never loses his enthusiasm, no matter what Kenan's Reba says.
Yeah.
He's still like, yeah!
I also, this is not going to come as a surprise to anyone, that I'm sort of forever nostalgic for those that sweet spot years we had at that show. But I like that Bobby is in it and Forte is in it as friends of yours telling you that's definitely a dude.
Right,
that's not
right.
Reba. That's a dude in a wig.
Yes.
And
then it also like references that I work at SNL and at 30 Rock.
Yeah.
But Keenan's not Keenan.
No.
He's just Kenan's some random
guy who
dude.
Found a wig.
Just some sort of like street walking dude who found a wig in a dumpster.
Well, I feel as though we mentioned Dick in a Box, and I think at this point, deservedly so, people can conjure everything about that. But I would ask if anybody takes anything away from this podcast that they should go back, watch Wish It Would Rain. We'll see if there's a demonstrable difference in the numbers. Two Worlds Collide.
Yeah.
And then Beowulf, the animated Beowulf.
It's a wonderful
and,
film.
And Port of Call, New Orleans.
Both incredible movies.
I feel like that's the viewing list for this podcast.
That's fair.
And you and I, we're gonna end this podcast because we're gonna go have dinner.
I love that. Did we ever have a sketch that we like did together on SNL?
That's a good question.
Like all my memories are of us like sort of goofing together on Update, like me like trying to get you to give up the smooch.
Give up the smooch. I liked writing for you on Update. I wrote you as Larry the Goose.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yeah, he was the guy who didn't like Sully Sullenberger.
You wrote me my only political thing ever. You would write me as Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah.
And we would do those together. That was super fun.
Rahm Emanuel is great. And wait, can you explain how you tried to hose me doing a political Meet the Press sketch?
Alec Baldwin was the host.
Yeah.
And I just had a talk with Seth about how I wanted to do more political stuff. I was like, I know that's like what's hot right now. It was maybe an election year or something. So I wrote a Meet the Press, and I just called it Meet the Press. I didn't say anything else about it. And then it went to the table.
It was already funny to all of us that there was Meet the Press, and you were the first writer on it.
It starts off, and it goes, it's Meet the Press. With special guest moderator Beetlejuice. It was me as Beetlejuice replaced. Who's the Meet the Press host?
It was probably Chuck Todd at the time. Like, yeah. Or David Gregory. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, but he's sick. I was like, hey, it's me. Welcome to Meet the Press. And I remember Alec Baldwin being like, what is this? But he was in Beetlejuice.
Yeah, right.
He was like, but so am I my character from Beetlejuice? And right. Like, it was like a mess.
Yeah, the fact that you couldn't wait to do it on a week where there wasn't a cast member from Beetlejuice.
I was so excited to do it.
You did another one, another switcher upper, which were they would crush so hard at the table, but the audience would never appreciate the same one. Parakeet, was it Parakeet Bookstore Bookshop?
Uh-huh. Parakeet.
Do you remember the sketch that turned
into? Oh, yeah. Was it Parakeet Junction or something?
Parakeet Book Club or
Book
something.
Club. Parakeet Book Club was the name of the sketch.
Yeah. And it was, again, it was like you're watching Parakeet Book Club on PBS.
Yeah.
Parakeet Book Club has been canceled. And then the show was Mondo Butts.
Mondo Butts. And the theme song went, Mondo. Mondo Butts. Mondo. Mondo Butts.
And it was, I believe it was you and Jude Law.
Me and
Jude
Law.
Was basically just reviewing butts.
They were two guys that were super into butts. and they would walk around town and take pictures of like really like normal looking dumpy butts on dudes and ladies.
Yep.
And talk about how great the butts looked. And it sort of devolved into realizing that they were like not necessarily even into them sexually. They just would like talk about and loved butts.
Yeah.
And the end of it, I think, was me being like, they were like, it was, what were their names? It was like the Scooch.
Yeah.
Like Dumper and the Scooch or something. And I was like, and now the Scooch is going to get a colonoscopy with a camera on the end of it. And I was like, Scooch, look at my butt. It's going in my butt. And he was like, oh my God, that's the best. I don't understand why the audience didn't like it.
That did not work perfectly well.
It didn't quite come together. It was sort of like Wish It Would Rain, except worse.
Yeah, so I think we did not collaborate. I will say the longer I was at the show, the more I realized I did like writing alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. Oh, my biggest contribution. Remember when I fake pitched the Barack Obama?
Yeah.
And you were like, do you mind if I actually do that? And I was like, please. And then it was like, you wrote an incredible sketch out of it. And I was like, I was just trying to like get through Monday.
Yeah, that was so Fred's Obama would get angry.
Yeah.
And then he would turn, the Rock was hosting.
Yes.
And then he would turn into like a Hulk-like character that was the Rock Obama.
You did so great with
super
it.
Super fun. But the biggest contribution you ever made to my career is when I was auditioning for Weekend Update, you said you should do a bit called Really.
Right.
Because that's how I talk.
You would do it all the time, unbeknownst to yourself. It was your catchphrase already in life.
Yes.
When we'd be talking about something and you would get incredulous and start being hilarious, you always would start off by going, really? That's what we're doing? And I was like, oh my God. Every time you start a sentence with that, it's my favorite thing you've ever said.
There was a long time where that was the thing that people talked to me about the most. And they just gave that to me. What a sweet gift.
It's not like anyone else could do it.
That's true.
I was just pointing out your own brilliance.
Very kind. It was very observant, and I appreciate it.
All right, well, I'm
here we go. Should we cut that out?
We should cut that part out.
Yeah, let's cut.
All that right, part. Don't use that part.
We just cut. We just cut something, and now we're gonna go to dinner. Okay. I love you.
I love you, buddy.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.